Welcome to Two Teas in a Pod. I'm Kate Diaz, a Manchester math teacher and elected president of CEA, the Connecticut Education Association. We are Connecticut's largest teachers union, representing tens of thousands of professional educators across the state.
And I'm Jocelyn Delancey, a fifth grade teacher in Darien, elected vice president of CEA and president of CEF, the Connecticut Education Foundation, CEA's charitable arm.
In every episode, you'll hear thought-provoking interviews, as well as actionable tips and strategies that you can implement in your daily life. We'll have stimulating discussions to help you become a more informed and effective educator and advocate for your students and the teaching profession.
Thanks for spending some time with us today. Now let's jump right into Two Teas in a Pod.
Well, thank you, Senator McCrory, for joining us here today. We are very fortunate to have you. Senator McCrory is the chair of the Education Committee and obviously means a lot to an organization like CEA, because everything you do and everything you legislate tends to impact us. So we are really happy to have you here today to kind of talk about what were the wins this legislative session and what's still on the to-do list. So I'm going to ask you first, what is it that you're really excited about that we accomplished this session?
Wow. Well, first of all, I want to thank you guys for having me. I think this is my first time coming in and doing an interview, and I haven't been over in this building in probably like 7-8 years. So thanks for having me back.
Well, welcome.
Doors always open, sir.
And before I forget, I want to thank all the educators in the state of Connecticut, whether you were CEA, AFT, no matter. Thank you for all the work you've done during the past 2.5 years for what's going on in our society and in our classrooms, and your teachers have been there.
Absolutely. I appreciate that. Thank you.
So the wins for this year, wow, man, we had a great year. And in my estimation, first of all, I start with the kids, the babies. We put a lot of resources into early childhood education.
Right.
I don't know if that actually pertains to you, but actually it does, because that's the
foundation. That's exactly right. You know, I'm a high school teacher, and I would argue every penny we spend on the babies, we see the benefit.
Exactly. So we finally made a huge investment in early childhood education slots, moving them up from 1,500 to about 3,000 now.
Beautiful.
But more importantly, investing in the people that work in that industry. We're losing a lot of individuals who really wanted to work with young kids, but financially couldn't afford it because the pay was so low.
Right.
And we made a huge investment in increasing their pay and also supporting the providers by increasing the supports that we put in place for slots for early childhood education. So that was a huge investment. If that's 1A, 1B would be the investment we made in social emotional learning, the resources we put into mental health.
Right.
For our children.
Yeah.
Especially in our schools. We expanded the number of slots we have for school-based health centers. Wow, we went from like 25 to about 47 now, and expanded the services and the other slots that were already there. So that's a huge.
That's massive.
I mean, we all know what this pandemic had done for our children.
Yeah.
And it's finally that the entire state of Connecticut realized that we had a serious problem with a number of kids that we've been losing. Putting that investment in social-emotional learning is huge. It's huge.
Yeah.
Well, and I think, too, I think people forget. We focus so much on academics that we forget that the mental health of our students and our educators – it matters when we have healthy educators and healthy students mentally and physically, they learn better.
Absolutely.
And their communities are stronger. So it's such an important investment.
Listen, exactly. I mean, I've been an educator. I've been in this business for 31 years, and I've seen the change. And I've and recently, and even the last 2 years, and I'm, you know, all educators are great. I think they get their best. I was talking to some of my friends who've been in education. And these are the superstar teachers.
Right.
I mean, these are the A-plus teachers. You know, the ones that you never see, never complain, go in there, do their job. And they was like, they have never seen it this bad in education.
You know, it's funny you say that. That is the thing. To me, that's the benchmark of the crisis, right?
Yeah.
You know, this has always been a difficult job.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's never been an easy year in teaching, really.
Right.
So I think the benchmark of a crisis is when the people who never crack start to crack. And you're absolutely right. The people who I have always leaned on as sort of the tried and true, who have been through sort of the challenges and have really seen a lot, are still saying, this is nothing I've ever experienced before.
Right.
And so I think that's an interesting, you know, it's an interesting push into what's next for us. Because I think as we talk about education, we have to constantly be talking about what's next. And I think, You know, I'm looking forward to the Recruitment and Retention Task Force. Mm-hmm. To me, that's a moment for us to pause and think a little bit about what are we doing to staff our buildings, to keep them healthy places to work, and to make them exciting places to come into as a profession and to stay. Because I think one of the things we've seen in this pandemic is, you know, precisely what you said, people going, I don't know about this.
Listen, this is the first time we've been in education forever. It's pretty much the same, you know, come in.
Right.
I believe this industry has changed forever.
Yeah.
It's never going to be the same. For the simple fact that a lot of people are, before we used to have a glutton of early, you know, kindergarten teachers, first grade teachers, that's not happening anymore.
No, it's not.
That's not happening anymore. And school districts are the worst, what I fear that's going to happen, we're going to start eating our own. And we're going to be purging from one district.
Well, we already have.
Yes.
You've seen it downstate.
Yes.
Where downstate, they're literally putting billboards up in each other's towns.
Yeah.
And you end up like with Bridgeport that had over 100 openings and Waterbury.
Yes,
and, you know, you sit there and you're just like.
But even not even the big city, even the smaller cities.
Yeah.
When school districts can offer you $5,000 to $6,000 signing bonuses. I mean, this industry is going to be almost like what people did at Aetna and Travelers Signature, just jumped around for whatever what was the best option.
Oh, it's 100%.
Well, I think we have to look at conditions too and the types of circumstances that school districts set up for not only our students but our educators in terms of who do you want in front of your students. You know, we want smart, sophisticated, savvy, diverse, caring people. Yes. And that is really hard to find, you know, for the conditions that we put in place for teachers.
Right.
So, you know, we have to decide who do we want in front of our kids and how do we make sure not only that we train them properly and, you know, guide them properly in their programs, but that we create conditions that make it desirable to be a teacher.
Exactly. You know, we talked about distance learning. I think that's here to stay.
And finding its appropriate home
for it
becomes
now,
really the competition space, right? Mm-hmm. You know, I've sat on the Remote Learning Commission. Mm-hmm. We've talked a lot about this, and it hasn't been an all or nothing proposition by any stretch of the imagination. Mm-hmm. But I think, and I hope that we've learned there are things that are bad, things that need to be done in a specific way. You know, I taught fully remote for a period, and I thought, this isn't all bad,
but it
takes a really specific set of conditions to do this well, particularly for a long period of time. And so, you know, I think you're right when you say, like, this profession just isn't what it used to be, and it ain't ever going back.
Yeah, it's not.
It's a whole new world.
I just can't see, like, with the young generation, how they so mobile. Those days where someone stayed in the school district for 25, 30 years.
Yeah.
And those were those, but you wanted those teachers because they were institutions. They knew the kids.
Yep.
They knew the families. They had, in some cases, they done taught the mother, the father,
yes,
grandma, you know?
Oh, yeah.
I just don't know if you're still going to get that.
You know, it is interesting. I think that as I just had a conversation this morning about teacher certification, and we were talking about the transient nature of people.
Right.
And that as we look at our staffing ability in Connecticut, we have to recognize that state borders actually are meaningless now.
Right, exactly.
And that we used to think, well, what is New York, Massachusetts, Rhode Island? Right. And yet when you watch and you look at sort of the transient nature of people, we actually have to extend our thinking because we're getting people from Tennessee and Colorado and California. So how do what we're doing in Connecticut translate across state lines really then does have to be articulated well.
Exactly. You know, you mentioned some of the wins, I think, and you mentioned earlier about recruitment and retention. One of the things that we did this year to help diversify teaching populations, we put in a scholarship program for people who graduate from high school, from our alliance districts initially. I thought I put $2 million in there. Clearly, it was $1 million. But it's a good start.
Next year,
we'll come back.
Baby steps.
But we have to start developing our own.
Agreed.
The competition for education, we already know what it looks like, right?
House.
In another 2 years, people are not coming from Ohio, New York, New Jersey, coming to Connecticut. You better have your own stock.
And you're right. And I think that grow your own mindset is really powerful. And it lends itself to like this recruitment and retention conversation about, okay, if we really value this profession, if we need this profession, if we want to grow it, and we really want to diversify it, you know, is there a way to look at offering a lower cost programming, right? Yep. Like looking at our state schools and saying, listen, if you go through our one of our state school programs, which are excellent,
right.
We're going to offer that at a discount.
Yes.
And maybe it's a discount after 5 years in a school in Connecticut or something. Listen. But we can build programs that really incentivize and make it desirable and make it something that if I'm a really savvy, and like Jocelyn said, you know, it's not just teaching that's looking for those people.
Right, right.
The people she described, we're competing with Pratt and Whitney.
For those people. Right.
Like a lot of places.
Well, who doesn't want to hire a teacher, right? Teachers are caring and well-educated beyond what they probably need to be. Hard workers and really creative, smart people. So.
And they come to work.
Yes, they do.
I bet you attendance rates in our profession is higher than any other profession. Think about it.
Yeah. I mean, and we get kind of swatted around every now and then when there's a, you know, data point that people like to toss out there. But I agree with you. I think the pandemic, one of the challenges for teachers was the mandatory quarantines. And
we laughed
the first time somebody said that. I'm like, okay, do you know what I've come to school
before?
You know, like the notion that if you have a cough you're going to stay home.
I'm going to stay home.
Oh, man. I remember going to school where my voice was like this, and I was like, I'm going to do it anyway.
Yes, exactly.
You know, so this is not a profession for the people who are tend to kind of back away. They tend to dive into the deep end and go.
Yeah. But I am so worried about the number of, after this pandemic, I mean, it was always a challenge to get some people to go into the profession. We know that. Some people were just blessed, whether it was generational or whatever the case may be. It was challenging then. But after this, and the kids saw what was happening to their teachers and what was going on in the classroom, man, we got to find a way. Profession is already great. We got to find a way to enhance and attract more smart young people from Connecticut who want to stay in Connecticut and work in Connecticut.
I think your mindset, I mean, the pandemic pulled the curtain back, right? And a lot of the stuff that we really didn't want to talk about because it made us uncomfortable really got kind of blatantly exposed. And families saw things. And you're absolutely right. Students kind of have a front row to things. Mm-hmm. You know, we have a lot to answer for in terms of improving our schools as a working environment.
I'm going to go back to something we talked about earlier about social emotional learning. And remember before it was taboo to say, well, there was a time when people said, I came here just to teach. No, you didn't. Now with COVID, you came here to be more than just a teacher. You came here to be a supporter. You came to be a social worker. You came to all those attributes go into teaching now. No one can say here, I just came to teach you 2+2 no more. Because the kid you have in front of you is not the same kid you had in 2019.
That is correct.
And every kid is going to be different because of this COVID going forward. And we have to understand that. It's a different conversation. It's a different level of concern. The practice is the same, but the understanding, and what I think now is teachers are going to get a lot more sympathy from the outside world.
I hope so.
I hope so. I've not always seen it.
You know,
it depends on the community. I do think that what we've seen truly happen is that we see communities who invest in their schools and how that works out in a positive way.
Right, we see
the communities that haven't truly invested in their schools and how that has had a negative impact. But what I think is really exciting is that we saw this session, the commitment from our legislature to really invest in our schools, in our kids, in our profession as educators. And I think we started this session with a lot of really great collaboration.
Yes.
And Connecticut has always kind of been a pioneer in education. And so this allows us to open the door to say, if we're working together, keeping teacher voices, admin voices, state voices, all in the same room, kind of discussing how to do this in a really proactive and productive way, I think we have a lot of hope in how we can move forward.
The good thing about Connecticut, at least in the education sphere, is we don't have fights along political lines. I mean, our community, you see how our community works. I've never been in I've been there 18 years, 17 years on education in the last 2 or 3 years. We try to figure it out. Like, how can this work?
I mean,
does it make sense? Never no back and forth. But we all understand education is not political at all. There's another thing you mentioned earlier that we got done real good, and I know I want to mention this before, is the HVAC program.
Yes.
We talk about healthy places where people will want to go work. You can't have a sick building.
No, I agree.
You can't have sick building. And because of that, we invested $100 million in an HVAC program that's going to go on in, I mean, forever. It's going to more like our school construction program.
Right.
Where school districts can go after these grant opportunities to help their buildings become safe and healthy with quality air in them.
I think that was a huge win.
That was a big hit.
And I think it was very exciting to kind of watch that conversation because, to your point, it was fascinating to watch how bipartisan the advocacy of that became. Yeah. And I think I'm looking forward to this session closing it, closing the loop and putting some of those standards in place that really push the needle and build the accountability. Because the money, I think, started to soothe sort of the calm about the district saying, don't throw an unfunded mandate at us. Yeah. So now the funding is present.
Let's
backfill this with some standards and accountability. Absolutely. Because I think we want buildings that people feel safe and comfortable to learn in. And that's on both ends of the continuum. I remember meeting with Robin Porter and her talking about that she didn't know her kids were sitting in buildings with their jackets on because they were cold.
I know. I know all about it.
But it's so funny because as a parent, she was talking about the fact that you only know what your kids tell you,
right?
And if your kid just assumes it's normal to wear your jacket in school, they just wear their jacket. But we don't really want that to be the reality. And we can do better here in Connecticut. And I'm excited to think that this next session, we can kind of close the loop and add that layer in.
I mean, I think on another note, having you come in, we just want to thank you for the work and collaboration that we had this session, because we really did get a lot of positive wins for our schools and our teachers and our students. And so, you know, we wouldn't have been able to do that without the collaboration and support.
Absolutely.
It's funny because, like I said, my committee is, we take, first of all, I never take credit for doing anything. It's all the members of the committee. Ideas come from everyone, from the left, from the right, from people out there. Constant people just walk in the hallway, and then they might say something about, I think we got to do something about X, Y, Z. Or maybe propose, like, for example, there was a conversation about maybe providing teachers an extra year because they worked through a pandemic, you know, some rescue hero prayer like that. That made a lot of sense. I mean, and that's a conversation that we might have.
We'll work with that one.
I promise you. We have members who are, what we found in sort of the detailing of that is that there's some statutory challenges that we have to overcome.
Yes, right.
But I think we can. I've been sitting here pondering that because I think, you know, we haven't done anything to acknowledge the teachers. And aside from just showing up and keeping schools open and keeping education going on, what I think teachers did that was really, truly unimaginable was in a week pivoted everything they did and changed their entire profession.
And like you said, this highlighted some of the inequities also in our system, right? So some school districts were able to pivot and go remote real quickly. Others struggled very, very difficultly.
Yep.
We're prepared now. We have a plan in place for all districts to be able to do that. So there's a lot of different outcomes, good things that came out of it, pandemic, besides, you know, challenges of staying at home, coming in, wearing a mask, not wearing a mask. Man, I mean, like we were saying earlier, I think this virus is here to stay.
I think so.
It's going to be like the flu, and we're going to just have to deal with it.
Yeah.
You know, last thing I want to say about the HVAC program, I remember I worked in a school, and it was known as the sixth school. It didn't have any windows.
No windows. That's a lovely work environment.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Welcome to our prison.
Yeah. Well, that's pretty much what it's built like. And it's funny because you start hearing stories. I mean, people got sick that had cancer.
Yeah.
That worked in that building. This is back in the day when people stayed in one school system and worked for 30 years.
Absolutely.
So I'm really excited about making sure the air quality of schools are really top-notch and putting that money together and coming back with the standards will be important next year.
I think it's an issue whose time has come, no question.
Yeah.
Well, Senator, you know, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention the one thing that, you know, Senator McCrory and I share. We are alumni of the Alternate Route to Certification.
Right.
We have that in common. So I always like to remind ourselves of that because as we sit here and we talk about the different avenues and the way to support our profession, I love to remember that there's a lot of ways to get into this profession and to build a successful career, and that's really the name of the game moving forward.
I forgot we were alumni, and I came in the second year was created when it was like I was like the second cohort. it.
So I was the first cohort of the weekend program.
Right. Well, everybody kept saying, it was a great program, but you had to take your whole, summer off. I was like, listen, you got to do what you got to do to get where you got to go. So, but then when they made the weekend program, that was even better. So I think, again, is this, we have to create other pathways for individuals to come into the skill. We want the traditional people.
Absolutely. Trust me,
the four-year program, listen, we can't.
We love them.
We love them. But it might not be enough of them.
We
gotta be big thinkers, and that's a good open the door a lot of ideas that we have about improving our way to get into our system, diversifying it, and making sure we have the best quality individuals in front of our classroom, because that's the most important thing. You know,
you bet.
The way that child feels about themselves or herself is very dependent upon who's in that classroom. If Connecticut can keep to grow his own and diversify our profession, I think we're gonna be okay. It's not going to be what it was before. It's going to be totally different, but everything's changing, right?
Exactly.
Generation, technology, kids, everything is going to be a little different. We'll be prepared for it.
And the good news is, you know, as we think forward, you know, everything that happened in the past didn't always work well for everyone. Looking forward to building new things and building better things isn't necessarily a detriment. Right. It really can be a strength.
Absolutely.
And Senator McCrory, I really appreciate you coming and having this conversation. I hope you come back.
You're going to have to come back.
I know. Listen, I feel like we just got started.
You know what we should do? This is what we should do. We should have a wrap-up after every session.
Oh, love it.
So, like this. Give us a time away for, and then come back 3 weeks and talk and wrap up, have a wrap-up of the session. What it went like, what went wrong, and, you know.
And what we're looking forward to doing next. Year.
Exactly.
Cause always thinking next.
Yeah.
So, thank you very much.
Appreciate you.
We want to thank all of our members for all you do and for listening to the latest edition of Two Teas in a Pod.
For more education talk, subscribe to Two Teas in a Pod and find us at cea.org/podcast or wherever you get your podcasts.
Like what you heard? Share our podcast with your friends and colleagues and spread the word, because we are
stronger together.